Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 15 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So this week's announcements, I don't know, I wouldn't say it was light. We had some good announcements. I think the ones we got were solid.
We had a casting announcement, kind of, it's been a while since we've had one, right?
No, it's been at least a few weeks, I thought.
So, and this one was not just, oh, great, it's a casting announcement because we haven't had one. It was a superb casting announcement.
Well, here's the thing. While he's not a big character, he's an important character. And he's not only important, but they cast, I would honestly think this is probably the most well-known actor they've cast in this production, period.
Yeah.
So if you look at his IMDb page, I mean, he's prolific. He's been in so many well-known things, and that's dating back to the 70s. So I think that it's perfect casting, and I haven't even said who it is yet, but it's Simon Cowell. I did what you said I was going to do.
I never said you were going to do it. I said that's what I wanted to read.
Simon Callow. Not Simon Cowell.
He would not be. He's X Factor now, right?
Yeah, he's X Factor now.
I was about to say American Idol meets Outlander, but actually X Factor meets Outlander. And to bring in another UK connection, X Factor, I think, started in the UK. So Simon Cowell is not in Outlander.
Not in Outlander. Simon Callow is. Callow.
And I know we're still in the beginning of first quarter, at least chapter-wise, of Outlander in our read-along. But I believe that the Duke of Sandringham does come back. Does he not?
He hasn't. I don't think he's even made an appearance yet in the
book. No, he hasn't. What I'm saying is I think he comes back and appears in at least one more book.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So it's kind of nice that we get this great, I don't want to call him a character actor. He could definitely be character actor. He's that good. But he's in so much that he's not a one-note kind of actor. But he can be a character actor.
I would say he is a character actor. I mean, if you look at the roles he plays, he's not generally playing the lead romantic, you know, hero.
I think whoever would be cast, him or someone else, whoever would have been cast as the Duke of Sandringham for this production would be a character actor. If he wasn't well known as one, just the character of the Duke of Sandringham is such that it's kind of funny.
Well, it's
entertaining.
I think that Stars knows that he's the biggest name they've had so far as well, because they had so many tweets like introducing him. Like usually it's like, hey, look, here's somebody new. Here's a picture. Yeah. But it's like they had like four or five tweets, and each one was like, want some more information on Simon Cowell? Go to this website. He was known for this. He's done that. Mm-hmm. And they had a great picture of him too. So
yeah,
I was very excited with that casting. Mm-hmm. And it's like I think when I was thinking about who they would cast as the Duke of Sandringham, he was not anyone that came to mind. But once he was announced, I was like, oh, I can totally see that. I can totally see that. So bravo, Stars, for that casting. There was a few new pics on the Stars Instagram account. Some more behind the scenes. Really, actually, a pretty picture. It was looked sort of like dawn with a little bit of mist in the Highlands, maybe.
Mm-hmm. It was very pretty. And then we heard about the cast kind of did a wrap up.
Well, they wrapped. They're on hiatus until the new year is the official word on that. Hiatus until the new year. So I don't know how many episodes they were able to clear.
I think, well, we guess it was, we know they finished 1 to 2.
Right.
And we believe they did 3 and 4, but we don't know how far they got into that block because they're doing 2 at a time. Maybe they finished 3 and 4. Maybe they didn't. We don't know exactly.
Right. And then I guess the last thing that we have is it looks like Ron Moore was a guest on another podcast. I've never heard of them. Are you familiar with them?
No, I actually was not familiar with them until I saw it. And I can't even say where I read about it. But yes, Ron Moore was a guest on, was it the Ryan and Ryan?
Ryan and Ryan.
Podcast. And that was, at least it was released Thursday the 5th. And I've only had a chance to listen to a little bit of it, but it was the bit that I have had the chance to listen to was great. We'll link it in our blog. It was really great. And to have, I think it was about 45 minutes. It could have been longer. It was solely their interview with him. So I really recommend it. What I have been able to listen to was really, really cool.
I wonder if he was wearing a kilt.
While talking?
Sure, why not?
Okay. The other thing that, I don't know if it's really news, it's definitely Outlander related. And the cool thing about this is it's 100% fan driven. Because everything else is pretty much what Stars tells us about, right? Or right. What we hear about through some kind of grapevine or official news service or entertainment news. This was something that, the second such type of event, and that was the NZ Oz Need Outlander, the Twitter event that was set that we talked about last week. And it was set for today, and it went, I'm not going to list all the time zones, but it was in our time zone in Pacific. It was 1 to 3 p.m., and Outlander Podcast was very happy to tweet during that time period. We had a good time, and from what we shared, the status of the Outlander fans Facebook page that stated something along the lines of, there has already been some communication with at least one of the networks that has said that they heard us loud and clear, and they've already had a positive response. And fans have been told that this information will be passed on to certain providers. So this is very exciting that to just have that within, I don't know, hours, less than an hour, hours after the event ended. So it definitely was trending. It trended enough for spammers to start to kind of hop on the bandwagon. So there you go. So bravo to all the fans that took part. We had a great time, and it was really cool to see all the participation.
So on to the read-along. We are doing Chapter 12, The Garrison Commander.
And just before we started recording, we were briefly running through points we wanted to discuss. And Summer asked me what we've already read, but I wrote down some of the things from the chapter, and that typically includes the chapter title. And Summer asked me, what was that chapter title again? And I looked over my cards and I looked down, and the first word I saw was Garrison. And I was like, it's not called Mr. Garrison, because I immediately thought of South Park. So there you go. Again, not related to Outlander in any way, but here we have Simon Cowell and South Park in one episode. So there you go. So this chapter, chapter 12, is called The Garrison Commander. In chapter 11, they are on the road. Jamie's back has been exposed for the benefit of the Jacobite cause to collect money. So chapter 12 opens with the party. They're on the road collecting rents and other payments. They stop at an inn. And this time, Claire, for some reason, gets her own room. It's her own attic room. She's a little freaked out having a room on her own. When I read that she was a little freaked out about having this time on her own or space to herself, I remembered earlier in one of the chapters 3 or 4 or something like that, when she was given her room in the castle. And it was either when she was left in her room or when she was going through Dr. Beaton's surgery.
Closet
that she was actually thankful for having some breathing space. She knew she was being watched, but she at least had that space to herself. And so it was just funny to kind of look at the two different times. One time she was happy to finally have a little bit of breathing room, even though she knew she was still kind of being watched. And here she's actually become so used to being accompanied and watched and, quite frankly, protected. Mm-hmm. And now, even though she's in this room, it's just funny how to compare that to how she is a habituation. You can become habituated, I believe, to almost anything. And what I read from this is she most likely more like a woman from this time. Women, typically, outside of, you know, doing their daily chores or whatever, would be at a castle or in a village. Outside of the home, maybe to the market, women probably would not just, you know, travel off to another village or something like that. So I see Claire as becoming a little more used to the 18th century ways in this particular point. Well, that, and her being used to being company. I think
she's become acclimated to being surrounded by all the men. I mean, mm-hmm. they've been sleeping.
That's
all
true.
Together in,
on the trip, yeah.
All together true. On the trip, and now she's suddenly in this room by herself, and she's like, "It's so quiet."
It's weird, yeah. That's true. So it's not just maybe the 18th century ways of things and being watched and accompanied. It is. It's this trip and them sleeping campout style, maybe, or even in an inn, she would have been on the floor with everyone else on the main floor, or in a room at least with the men and their snoring and their farts. Yay. She talks about that quite a bit.
Well, I think also, as far as Castle Leoc was concerned, I think it was relatively safe. It was a safe space. You know, no one was overtly threatening her when she got there. Mm-hmm. And she was being treated marginally like a guest. So she felt like, you know, I've got this breathing space. I've got this room to myself. No one's going to bother me in here. Mm-hmm. I'm under, you know, basically kind of under the protection of the big honchos here. Whereas when they're traveling, she's really at the mercy of whoever gets her alone. I mean, it's the nature of the time period. So I think they're going from place to place, and then she feels safer when she's surrounded by all the men because no one's going to mess with her when there's all those men around her. And then now they've taken her to some inn and they put her off in a room by herself, and I don't think she knows what to do with herself.
She notices that there is a place for a bolt on the door. It's been removed or it doesn't work? As I wrote down, she cannot bolt her door. There's no way for her to do so. It's dark and she's, I guess, getting ready. It's either bedtime or she's getting ready to go to bed. And she hears movement on the floorboards outside the door. And she grabs a candlestick to use, presumably, as a weapon. And
because this is Clue.
Because it's Clue, exactly. Colonel Mustard's outside.
It's Mrs. Beecham in the inn with a candlestick.
And someone opens, what she notices is as she's kind of stiffened and grabs the candlestick, someone opens the door and comes in a little bit and then recedes and shuts the door again. So they don't make contact with her. It's almost like someone's just coming in and seeing that, yes, she's there, everything's okay, and then closes the door again. And Claire approaches the door and opens it. She's intending to confront whoever is out in the hallway. But as she walks out the door slightly, she trips over someone and falls and hits her head. And this someone or something ends up being Jamie.
This seems to be a habit for her, tripping over Jamie in the dark.
Well, that could only be partially her fault, because Jamie puts himself in really odd. Well, this was directly Jamie's fault.
This one was, because he put himself literally right in front of her door. But as far as the stables was concerned earlier, he was just minding his own business.
So cursing, Jamie asks her how much she weighs. And she says 9 stone. And he replies that he thinks she crushed his liver. And that made me laugh. Not that injury is funny, but I thought, that's quite specific, Jamie.
I thought so, too. And I was thinking to myself, in that time period, how much of the inner workings of the human body did they know? Like, that was incredibly specific.
Well, today even, cultures eat liver. Okay, so that's not a secret.
They don't eat human livers, though. I mean, you would assume that humans also have a liver.
No,
but as far as the police,
even though they likely person, I mean, on the battlefield, you probably saw a lot of body parts and a lot of innards. But any hunter who has dressed his own kill knows the different organs. Maybe doesn't know their function, but knows that a body has, or a mammal, even if they can't name a mammal, right? They know that they have certain things.
Right.
And it may be different.
But if he, any hunter who kills a stag or a deer or whatever, wouldn't find the liver in the same place as a human being. We're not built the same way.
Yeah, I'm sure they were not studying comparative anatomy, but I think it's fair. I think they knew where the heart is. They knew where the stomach was approximately. I think it's fair to say they probably knew where the liver was, but I did think it was quite a specific
for sure
statement. That was my liver, Claire. Be careful next time. Go for the haunch. I don't know. So they're chatting about... So as Claire is basically asking him what the heck he's doing outside her door, why he's there, we find out that there's a party of English dragoons downstairs. He apologizes for trying to protect her, and he turns away. And this part made me laugh. I was like, you go, Jamie. He turns around to walk away, and she's like, Jamie, please, Jamie, stop. And he stops. But he does not turn back around to face her. Claire has to go walk around to face him. I'm like, you go, Jamie, because Claire can be a little witch sometimes. So we love you, Claire. We love you, Katrina. And which forces Claire to walk around to him and apologize. And as soon as he does, Jamie smiles. Jamie's like, Jamie knows very well what he's doing. And he says, basically, go back to bed. I'll be here. And she asks him to sleep in her room where the floor is cleaner because there are nasty things on the ground. And he is shocked and says he can't do it. It would ruin her reputation. And Claire literally starts to laugh, but then turns it into a coughing fit. She finds this whole thing a little prudish because she has shared so much intimacy sleeping with 20 or more men in the same room. And Jamie's like, it's not the same thing. So, which we understand
in
the time.
You think it would be worse, though.
That's true.
What kind of reputation do you have? Oh, I sleep in a room with 20 men.
He says that he will take her her blankets to make a pallet. At least it's cleaner than the floor. And he says that he, too, doesn't really want to come to the attention of the English. And Claire's afraid that he'll still be in danger out there in the hallway. But he says if someone comes up that it's dark, they likely won't see his face. But if someone does come up, it's dark. And if someone starts something with him, he can just say that he's waiting his turn. That made me laugh, too.
He's very quick-witted.
Of course. The next morning, Jamie is gone, and Dougal and Claire ride to Brockton to see the garrison commander of Fort William. He goes around, I won't say inspect, but he goes around to various towns, various villages, etc. He's not happy to keep his office at Fort William. He goes and kind of takes an office with him and travels and does work on the road. And it comes as a surprise to Claire because she, as we already suspected, she was prepared for attempting to flee, to go through the stones, from the location of Fort William. That's the one place she's pretty sure
she can navigate herself.
From Fort William to the stones. But now she's not sure of her plans. They get to the inn where the commander is staying. And Dougal goes upstairs to talk to him first. And Claire is feeling really odd and uncomfortable with the men in the bottom floor. She remarks about how uncomfortable she is in the presence of other Englishmen, of English soldiers. And that too is worth noting because when she first came through the stones, obviously she was uncomfortable with anyone because she's out of her time, out of her element. But to make a statement or to notice specifically the difference she feels between being surrounded by Scottish men or warriors, and then English warriors, right? English soldiers. She feels more uncomfortable with her own countrymen or around them. It makes sense because of what's going on and also whom she's there to see.
I mean, and given her experiences that she's had with Englishmen so far.
Yeah.
You know, she's not thinking too highly of them.
So eventually Dougal comes back and takes Claire back up to the room and leaves her with Captain Randall, but not before he has a chance to hear Captain Randall laugh and say that he basically wasn't surprised that it was Claire who he had been brought, because Dougal had gone up to discuss,
right,
to say that he had brought someone for
pretty
him.
Pretty much once, I guess he described her to him and he was like,
that's pretty much who I know who it is. So then Dougal leaves, and Captain Randall asks her, as of course we knew he would, asks her who she is, and she sticks to the same story that she told Colum. Randall remarks that he knows of no Beechams in Oxfordshire, where she says she's from, and she snaps that, how would you know? You're from Sussex. He was very suspicious at this, of course, and he tests her a little bit more by asking her to name the place where the corporal, who's also in the room, is from. So he recites a little bit of verse, and she is very close when she guesses where he's from. Randall then asks her if she speaks French, and she comes right back with, very well.
What of it?
Yeah, what of it? He's definitely not happy, and he insists that she tell him who she is. He then, because of her obstinance, obviously. Number one, she's truly not a spy and not French, so there's not much she can say. But also, she has a bit of a tude, which we all understand. And I have to back up before I say what the next thing that happens is. We've already read the book, so it's not a surprise what comes next. But the first time I read this, besides the whole thing about time travel, obviously, I think this shocked me the most. At this point in the book.
Well, no, it totally shocked me when I read it the first time.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Because up until this moment, yes, you know he's kind of a D-bag. That's kind of a given. He wasn't, he, you know, because he kind of pushed himself on her when he ran into her. But I don't think that we were truly introduced to the level of D-baggery that he is sinking to until this scene. And when he did what you're going to say he did, yeah. I mean, it was just like...
It was a shock.
It was definitely jarring.
Because it was a woman. I think that, yeah. And that maybe it's sexist to say or not, but it was just shocking. So he has the corporal, and I think that almost makes it more heartbreaking, is that, okay, he punches Claire. He basically full-on punches her in the stomach. But before he does it, he engages the corporal to hold her hands back. To me, that almost makes it worse, because number one, he's involving this poor young man who himself, I think, is described as being... You know, later on when she falls to her knees, and he actually, with a look to Randall first, he helps her up. I really think he feels awful. That's my guess. And he probably feels even, number one, awful that Randall did that. And number two, even worse that he was kind of part of it. But I'm projecting, I admit. But the fact that Randall has her held while he does it. Number one, it's a woman. Number two, she's being held back so she can't attack him, obviously. It's still shocking to me. I don't really have any words. But the best part of this entire thing is that in the midst of her pain and shock and this haze of in and out of, not consciousness, but in and out of her trying to... She's still seeing Frank in him, obviously, and he is definitely not Frank. He's not treating her well at all. And so this has to be killing her soul, trying to reconcile these two things, the image of this person she loves and whom she has lost, with the same image that is now physically attacking her. And the best part of this entire chapter, and Diana does this a lot, of course, at the end of chapters, she ends it with these little tiny one-liners that are just great. And he asks her, after having punched her, do you have anything else to say to me now? And she says, your wig is crooked.
He must have hit her hard. To knock his own wig crooked, he must have hit her. I mean, we know he hit her hard, but
yeah,
he put a lot into that punch. If he punched her so hard, his own wig almost fell off his head or got crooked.
It still shocks me. I shouldn't be shocked. We know that, or maybe that's the whole point, because if this is a first-time read, you have a hint about what kind of character he is, but you truly don't know. We definitely don't know the whole package, yeah. But this kind of shows you that if he's someone, yes, working for the crown, yes, trying to root out spies and all of that, that's his job. But I mean, it's if it were a man... Would it be any better? No. But we're so not used to women being treated this way. Women, even today, even though we're a much more egalitarian, equal society, supposedly, right? We have women's rights, all of these things, much more equality. It still is shocking that a woman would be treated this way, well, even in that time.
I know the terrible thing,
especially
is,
in that time.
For me, the shocking bit of it is the kind of violence that he puts upon her. I hate to say this, but it's like you half expect them to try to like force themselves on her.
Oh, sure. And he almost did.
In a sexual manner.
Yeah, of course.
But the fact that it was not sexual in any way, shape, or form, and it was purely just to inflict bodily harm, is what was so jarring. Mm-hmm. Because at least I've read a lot of historical fiction, and most of the violence against women is of a sexual nature.
Of course.
So for this to be violence for the sake of violence...
That does not involve her sex organs.
Correct.
I think that's what it is. It's that. That's true. It's funny how we are shocked and horrified by rape in books and in real life, but almost not to the extent. Almost like we've been not brainwashed,
conditioned.
But we've been conditioned that violence against women, it may include beating someone up, but it equals, at least in some manner, sexual violence.
It's true, but even sexual violence isn't about sex. It's usually about power.
It's about power, or dehumanizing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but that's a little deviation from that.
So anyway, yeah. But I think, though, because I am still I don't even know what read this is for me, but I am still shocked by this punch because it's not rape. It's not a blow. I mean, again, it wouldn't have been nice if it were a blow to the face either, but I honestly don't have the exact reasoning, but I think you have gotten nearer than I ever have on my own. And that is, even though it's not better in any way, but
no, I mean,
we expect, especially in historical romance, or excuse me, historical fiction, in fiction, we expect violence against women to include rape or sexual assault in some way, and including battery. But this is just battery, and very targeted, and not even sustained. It's a one-time thing that I think that's probably why it's so shocking.
Yeah. On that note, I think we have completed chapter 12 for this week. Next week, we will be moving on to chapter 13, A Marriage is Announced. So if you want to read ahead and get ready for next week's discussion, we would be glad to have you along.
And we have a special guest next week as both an interview or chat guest, as well as our first guest to join us in our discussion on the read-along.
Yes, next week we will be joined by Teresa from Outlander Kitchen. Also next week, for our interview, we will be making Black Jack Randall's Lavender Fudge. So if you'd like to join us in our on-air tasting, please feel free to make some and join us. That's about all we have time for on this week's episode of the Outlander Podcast.
Thank you again, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.